Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Wealth DNA with Ron the Ronald Naraki. It's time to check your wealth DNA so you can enjoy the second half of life. Here's the host of the show, Ron Naraki.
Hello, this is Ron. I am hoping you can hear me because I am not getting any feedback at all from the studio. I'm calling in remotely and hoping that I'll get some sort of signal from somebody that things are indeed working. If you can hear my voice, then I have some great news. The greatly publicized end of the world this past weekend didn't occur. Predicting the end of the world is kind of difficult. We don't have any recent history or trends to predict that event. If you're going to invest your money in anything, whether a catastrophe, stocks, bonds, real estate, or you pick it. You need to have some sort of data, something that tells us what the fundamental reasons are, or the, why are we having really difficulties today? Let me get a hold of something here is not happening correctly. Anyway, you need some historical data, show you what's been moving, what direction, make sure it's moving in the direction you're planning. The last few months, we've focused on entrepreneurs and small businesses. Today, we'll be talking to Michael Orr. And I sure hope we will, because I'm definitely not getting the feedback from the station. He's an entrepreneur that chose to focus on real estate in the Phoenix area. In the process, he's become the expert on residential real estate in the area, and specifically, the data that can help investors make the right decisions. He publishes the Cromford Report. I don't expect he'll be predicting the end of the world, but I sure wish we knew exactly what was happening on the radio station. It sure seems like we're having the end of the world here today, but I am hoping that gets resolved very quickly here. Let me just check my messages here.
Hello?
Yes, you can hear me?
Yes, this is Michael.
Yes, Michael. Okay, you can hear me. Pete, can you hear us? We are having some problems. I'm just not sure we even have gone fully live here.
Okay.
Give me a few seconds here, Michael, and it looks like
sure.
At least we're making some progress. I don't know what the music has kicked in. I did give a little bit of an intro, and I am just not hearing back from our publisher. And I've been producer. He's also a publisher of other things. Give me just a second. Let me continue here, and let me see if I can get getting some very strange feedback here from, and I'm trying to reach him, but of course his line is tied up in the meantime. But over the last few years, most of the people in the U.S. and many of the world have become armchair experts on real estate. It's amazing how many people, after the fact, knew and predicted that the housing market would collapse. Where were they all back in the boom years? Why didn't they share that with the rest of us? Most of those self-proclaimed experts, by the way, now are giving us a forecast for what happens next. Those forecasts are either continued drop in prices, or prices stabilizing, or prices increasing, or we'll see an increasing number of foreclosures due to the next big wave, or the end of foreclosures is in sight. And by the way, realtors out there, admit it. You tell the buyers this is the time to buy, and you convince the sellers that they better unload their property now before the shadow inventory hits the market. Should we just pick on the realtors? Should we talk also about the mortgage brokers who have some of the same? What do they tell us? They tell us that this is the best time to be financing or refinancing. Interest rates are heading up. Is that true or not true? You tell me. Boy, we have it hanging. Just one second here. It looks like I am getting some feedback from Pete. One second. Hello, this is Ron. Okay. All right. Excellent. All right. Thank you. All right. At least I know what's happening on the air front. We are on the air. We are moving ahead. And my apologies for all of the confusion. We're just having a little bit of problem from the other end, from the actual studio giving us feedback. But all right, mortgage brokers, how many of you told somebody recently interest rates are going down? They should wait a year or so to refinance. Well, certainly these prognosticators and realtors and mortgage brokers can't all be right. That's what makes the markets exciting. Some people want to buy, others want to sell. If they all agreed, no one would take the other side of the transaction. And let me remind you, if I want to buy a house, that means somebody else must be willing to sell at a price I'm willing to pay. There has to be a buyer or seller for a market to work. And so I guess the market is working. Let me remind you, and now I think we've resolved our technical problems, you're listening to the Wealth DNA radio show. I'm your host, Ron Naraki. And I look forward to you joining us every second and fourth Monday. If you want to get a reminder directly to your email, you've got one of two options, both options. You can send an email to ron at wealthdna.us, and I am still getting some weird stuff happening here on my computer, strangely enough. But we'll keep you posted about your future shows and events. The other option you have is up in the upper left-hand corner, right above, and I guess my picture stays up here. That's interesting. There's a follow button. Click that follow button, and you will get reminders from the Boomer and Babe Network about each of the shows happening. This show, as the name implies, focuses on building your wealth and also understanding your wealth DNA. Well, now we're getting a little bit of extra feedback in there. My apologies. During the show, we also welcome you to ask questions, either down in the chat window, and you should be seeing a chat window down below my picture, and I'm going to confirm that is working okay. Let's see here. Boy, we are having our challenges. Definitely having some challenges. Okay, it looks like that is loading up okay. All right, so there is a chat window down there. That seems to be working, and that's good news. But the other option is you can call in 917-388-4162. Now, the difficulty is I'm not sure if this is going to be able to patch people in on an appropriate basis as they should be. Now, by the way, most millionaires made their money investing in real estate. Many did that without buying right at the bottom or selling right at the top, although it does help your returns if you know which way the market is headed. And as you'll learn at some of our seminars, it is actually possible for a real estate investor to make money without ever buying or selling a property. I do it all the time. Anyway, today's guest is Michael Orr. He's an entrepreneur and a founder of the Cromford Report, based right here in Phoenix, Arizona. Michael brings to his role 31 years in the computer industry, and he's not as old as that would sound, and several years as a realtor. I think he double-counted some of that time. He evidently saw a need and used those two backgrounds to start the Cromford Report. Let's give him a warm radio welcome. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks very much. And actually, I am as old as that makes me sound.
Well, I figured you double counted. I mean, you don't look like you're much more than a 30s, early
40s. I just look younger than I really am. I think that's
okay. All right. Maybe that's it. But you definitely have some experience, that's for sure.
Yeah. I'll be 60 this year, in fact, so... disclosure. Yeah.
Oh, wow. All right. If you're speaking to a group for the first time, like to this radio audience, how do you describe the Cromford Report?
Well, it's really a website where people can get the latest information about the residential real estate market for Phoenix and for greater Phoenix. It's something I started about 5 years ago, and I just wanted to communicate to people what was really going on because I saw so many confusing and inaccurate sources of information at the time. I thought, well, if somebody could do it, why not me put together information that actually tracks exactly what's going on and gives people the hard numbers?
Okay, now, most of the subscribers, like myself, probably think of it as an IT system that gives us an easy way to slice and dice the information about the real estate market, in the Phoenix area, at least, or the Valley, as we refer to it. Is that a fair description?
I think that's pretty fair, yeah. I try to make the charts customizable so people can turn on and off the things that they want so they can generate a chart that tells them the story that they're looking for. And it allows realtors in particular to explain to their clients, either buyers or sellers, what's going on in the local market.
Okay. Now, I gave a thumbnail sketch of your background. Now, the obvious question most of our listeners are going to ask is why you left a career in IT, then went off and developed an IT solution to help the real estate industry. What triggered that?
Well, as you said, I'd been 31 years in IT, and I was starting to get a little tired of working big companies, all the travel. I hadn't spent much time with my family, so I decided to find another way in which I could use some of the skills, but work from home and have a little bit more quality time with the family. And,
okay, so what
Sorry?
Yeah, I was going to say, so you mean your entrepreneurial spirit was stronger than your love of company politics and everybody else's deadlines?
I think that's an accurate statement, yeah.
I've been there, done that, and definitely an entrepreneur myself. So I can
yes, I wouldn't
that.
Want to go back now. It's
no.
Certainly
no,
rewarding to work for yourself.
That is correct. That's correct. And before we go too far, let's make sure that our listeners know what the actual website address is, the URL address, because they can, in the meantime, while listening, they can actually take a look at the website and get a feel for what we're talking about. And that URL is www.cromfordreport.com. Let me spell that. CROMFORDReport.com. Correct?
That's right.
Okay. Now, are there some areas of the website available to the public without subscribing? Obviously, they can get on, they can see the menus, all of those kinds of things. But are there some of them they can take a look at now that without being a subscriber?
The vast majority of it requires a subscription. And the exception would be the forum area, which is open to anybody who registers.
Okay.
But the public can, one of the ways the public can get the data is by working with a realtor, because realtors get free access to the Cromford Report through their subscription to Armless. So that's a good way of accessing the data if they don't feel like subscribing. Although, you know, from my business point of view, the more subscribers I get, the better, of course.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And how do people contact you, by the way, to set up a subscription? Is there a way to do that right online?
Oh, yeah, there's a subscription link. Just key in a few details there, and then you can either subscribe through PayPal or by sending me a check.
Okay. And if somebody wants to, do you have on the site, so that's one thing I didn't even notice, is there on the site information about when you're on various events like a radio show or doing seminars or invited to the realtors' conventions or whatever else?
Yeah, I try to keep a log of when I'm speaking and so people can come along and hear me at those events. There's
okay.
also some education classes that are run by Armless from time to time on how to use the Cromford Report and get the most out of it.
Exactly. Okay. Now, there are many, many indicators, and you and other experts will publish some information or the press will contact you that kind of help them understand the market conditions. What I'd like to do is cover some of those indicators in some sort of a logical sequence. So my thought was start with the lead indicators, the things that give us the furthest out indication that something is changing, up, down, or staying the same. What would be that first indicator people would look to for that long time lead information on what's happening?
Well, I created something called the Cromford Index, which was designed to do that, to give the most advanced warning of a change in the market. And that historically, it's been giving something like 12 to 15 months advance warning of a change in the market. It basically uses the principles of supply and demand mm-hmm. and compares them to say, well, if supply is exceeding demand, then that's negative information. We're likely to see prices go down. So we started to see deterioration in that Cromford Index back in 2005, giving us early warning about the fact that prices were likely to turn around in 2006. And then, of course, the opposite is true. If demand is exceeding supply, then prices are likely to rise, but they don't rise at the same time that the indicator says. There's often around a year's delay between the signal and the actual mm-hmm. result.
Well, that's the whole idea of a lead indicator, though, right? To give
exactly,
you information
yeah.
before it's too late.
Yeah, and
right.
I felt that the real estate market was probably the best sort of market for this sort of thing. You know, you can't try and do the same thing on the stock market and the whole market
right.
changes direction 4 or 5 times a day, whereas the real estate market is in a very long waves and is much more easy to predict as long as you're tracking the right numbers.
Okay.
A lot
now,
of people make the mistake of trying to track pricing, which, of course, is really the last thing that turns around. It's the trailing indicator rather than the leading indicator.
All right. So we'll see a few indicators before we talk about pricing then. Now, is there one market index for the entire market, or can I look at it in various submarkets?
On the home page is an index for the entire Greater Phoenix market.
Okay.
Within the subscriber area, the Cromford Index is available for individual cities. And it's the sort of thing that needs a reasonable amount of data, so it's difficult to get right down to very small areas, but certainly most cities are large enough to use the Cromford mm-hmm. Index.
Okay. All right. That's fair enough. Now, I happen to have in front of me, I pulled it up ahead of time, so I knew I wouldn't be flexible enough to deal with technical problems and where you go through an interview and at the same time try to find it on the website. So I printed out ahead of time the Cromford Index for all areas, and I printed out in the long-term format. So you actually have several different selections I can do there.
Right.
And if I look at, well, first of all, it kind of reminds me of the conference board's leading economic indicators that they publish for basically the contracted by the government to provide indicators. So it looks to me that it's very, very similar. But before we kind of talked with the listeners about what's on that chart and what it's telling us, tell us a little bit how you came about, you know, how it's done. The conference boards is like 10 leading indicators that they found over time work. And it sounds like you've done something very similar. What are some of those indicators and how did you come up with this whole thing?
Yeah, it's actually quite a complex formula, but I probably wouldn't be able to do it if I didn't have Excel helping. But the basic input, the number of active listings is a key ingredient of the supply.
Mm-hmm.
So derive that each day from MLS. It's in itself, it's not too useful until you compare it with previous years, because supply has a seasonal pattern. So
gotcha.
Rather than just
okay.
using an absolute number, you'd have to do a comparison with, say, the last 7 to 10 years. So you have
mm-hmm.
to have
so
a lot of data
adjusting
that's history.
That one, right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so every time I look at the supply level today, I compare it with the same date in the previous 10 years. That gives me a good input on supply. And then for demand, I use two things. First of all, the recent sales generally look about 30 days back and compare that with the same time previous year and in the last 10 years, because sales are also seasonal.
Okay.
And then I also look at the pending sales, which is something which is really actually quite hard to find out unless you're a member of the MLS, because pending data is not usually made public on the public-facing websites. So I use a formula that combines all those things and then smooths it out. Rather than just taking each individual day, I use a rolling average technique so that we don't get too violent changes. And the result, normal index would be 100, where we have supply and demand imbalance. So if it goes above 100, that tends to mean that the market is doing well. Below 100 means the market's not doing very well at all. So if you look at the long-term chart, you'll see we actually went above 300 back in 2005 mm-hmm. and all the way down to about 27 in 2007, which was the sort of real lowest point of demand versus supply.
Okay, we'll actually walk through that a little bit. But before we continue, let me remind our listeners, during the radio show, and I'm going to suggest today, just because I now have the details, our producer's microphone has gone out, and that's therefore he's going to have a little difficulty letting us know that callers are on. So I'm going to suggest that online you see below the window a chat window where you can actually enter questions. So I'm going to suggest that. So if you have some questions for Michael, feel free to do that in the little chat window right below the radio monitor there. You'll see Blog Talk Radio in a little chat window. So anyway, before I just wanted to make sure that I reminded them. So if there are some questions from our listeners, they can, you know, we will interject them. I obviously have tons of them. So I'm not worried about running out of questions, but nonetheless, I always like to give our listeners that chance.
Okay, I should also add that it's also easy to ask me questions on the website. You can always email me from there, and I'm happy to take queries from people using the Contact Us connection.
Good. And I know you're very responsive. You're probably the best person I know in terms of email response. I mean, you're sometimes within seconds and minutes as opposed to hours and days. Which
That comes from sitting on the computer screen all day doing the numbers.
All right.
I see email as soon as it comes in.
That's right. I have the chart in front of me, which you were just talking about. And I see now where the index is telling us the market is going. Now, I guess what we could do is keep that a secret and just kind of move on and talk about other topics, but that wouldn't be fair, would it? I think we should probably talk a little bit about the peaks and valleys. But overall, before we talk about the specific kind of shifts in the market that we've seen from this data, what's your learning over the last, looking over the last 10 years of data? One you mentioned, it's about 12 to 15 months lead that it gives you, but have you found it giving any false signals or any other kinds of information that, you know, would you want to forewarn somebody of?
Well, I haven't found it giving me false information, but sometimes unexpected changes occur in the market, which cause it to change direction when I didn't expect it. But usually the first thing I think is the index is going wrong, and then later I find out, no, it was telling me the truth after all. It was me that didn't understand the market.
Okay, so the learning is it works.
It seems to work, yes. It certainly, by looking at a chart, you can see how the bubble was forming. And you can also see the point at which the recovery started taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, you know, the numbers are ahead of us poor humans in giving us the information. We often find it difficult to believe the numbers because everybody around us has a different point of view. You know, people tend to think the current situation is going to last.
Right.
Whereas if the numbers can be telling us, hang on, things are changing. But if you're the only person feeling that way, it's very difficult to believe those numbers because everybody else still believes the old situation is going to continue.
Okay. All right. So what you're saying is emotions get in the way of reality.
Emotions and influence of people surrounding. You know, it's difficult to be a contrarian because everyone else thinks, you know, those people who did believe in the bubble back in 2005 were generally treated as crazies by everybody else who thought they were making a lot of money out of it.
Correct, although after the fact many people were experts that just didn't share that information with anybody.
At the time.
All right, as you said, that it starts out kind of normal is around 100, and I see that looking at the chart back in the 2001, 2, and 3 time frame. Now, since October of 2010, the index is heading higher. That seems to be, you know, pretty good news. It sounds like things are getting better.
Yes, I think it is good news. And allowing for the 12-month delay, that says by the time we get to October this year, things should be looking a lot better than they were October last year when life was pretty dismal.
Dismal.
We just had the expiry of the tax credit in April caused a big drop in demand during the summer, and prices followed suit during the third quarter. So we had quite a significant drop in prices between July and September. But the market started correcting itself. You know, when prices drop, it brings new buyers into the market. We had a really busy December, lots of sales, and prices really stabilized during the first 4 months of this year. And right now, everything I'm looking at tells me the market is improving quite fast. We've got a lot of activity going on. Price is stable and demand stable and supply going down quite fast. So that's the reason that the market index is well over 120 now, saying things should be getting better soon.
Okay. That's right. I just looked at that level now. The But if I look back, and as I kind of look back to other periods when it went to 120, I think the first time I see it here is back as late as July of 03. So that's well before the market really started to take off. So that was the first indication. And then it really got confirmed, it looks like somewhere around April of 2004, that something had changed and something was heading up. So it looks like that was when you could really start predicting that there was about to a boom about to come.
Yeah, the increase in 2003 in the spring was unusual, but it then fell back again a little in the second half of the year. It was still at an elevated level, though. So, you know, the second half of 2003 was pretty busy for home builders, and the market was very active. Prices were already rising faster than average. But then in 2004, they really took off. Prices started going up at unheard-of amounts.
And that continued level was really higher than today, correct?
Oh, yes. That continued all the way through until the mid part of 2006 is when we really reached the peak in pricing. But by that time, supply was already growing very fast, and we reached the peak in pricing when we had an excess of supply and demand was falling away.
That's
so at
point.
That point, the decline in pricing was pretty inevitable.
Correct. And so if I, you know, if I look at that index back in 2004, I mean, it was 2004 and even early 5, it was going up parabolically. It kind of reminds me of the silver charts. I do some investing in a variety of different markets, and silver charts kind of look like this about a month ago, where it had just been climbing like crazy. And it looks like just about in April of 05, you hit that peak, like you said, over 300, so three times normal. And then I started seeing the first downticks in right after that, at the beginning of May, and then by July, it looks like it was time to start worrying.
Yes. Yeah, and in fact, I owned an investment home at that point and decided to sell it in August as a result, and I think we closed in October, so I'm very glad that I took that decision, which was a decision I took based on these numbers.
Okay, interesting. So you do take advantage of your own information, which is always good. Now, I assume emotion still kicks in a little bit.
Mm-hmm. It does.
it's just kind of learning that it works, and you got to get the emotion out of the way.
Exactly.
All right. So it really is a great lead indicator. It looks like it gave the investors, realtors, and homeowners at least a year lead time to say, almost even 2 years to say, things are not going to be rosy forever. And so that would have been, and it really did move down pretty rapidly after that, as we saw prices happen a couple of years later. Now, by, it looks like November of 07, it bottomed, and you said it, just around 26, 27, which is, one quarter of a normal level. Now, I look back, I had just bought my house here since I moved back to this country at that time. So I guess I should have been, had I had this information, I probably would have been really concerned about buying a house, which I was. But at the same time, you need a place to live, and it was a lot cheaper than it used to be.
Right, but it would have been a better idea to have rented for a couple of years at that point.
Correct, and oh boy, and again, that was one of those things we debated, but just not knowing this market, not having the context at the time, and we liked the particular area where we are. So anyway, it's one of those things that you do, probably based on emotion rather than facts, but at the same time, it was pretty clear that market prices might head down. Let's talk about some of the other ways you measure market. Like you said, this is the earliest lead indicator. What's the next indicator you look at to kind of give you a feel for when that might be happening, or what, you know, how do you dig in deeper to say, all right, I've seen a signal, let's say, that things are heading up since October of 2011. Now, how do I know a little bit closer about what that timing might be?
Well, the next indicator I use is something I call days inventory, which is it's basically taking the number of active listings and dividing by the annual sales rate. This is something that's much easier to calculate than the market index, and you can apply it even to quite small market sectors, like individual subdivisions. So it is also a measure of supply versus demand.
Mm-hmm.
The only disadvantage is it doesn't change very much because you're using the annual sales rate. So what you're dividing by right. Does not change dramatically from month to month. That's really why I like it, because it gives you a signal. It really means it. It's not going to give you random signals because of just brief fluctuations in the market.
Ah, okay, interesting. So it's kind of like one of these moving averages. It has changed, basically, and it's telling you it's then an indication that things are indeed changing. It's not one of these just one day changed it or one month changed it.
Yes, it's like a long-term moving average, if you think of the equivalent things in the stock market.
Exactly. No, I always try
and so this. It'll tell you about a long-term change from a bull to a bear market. And it also emphasizes supply as being a key element. So back in 2007, we had really hit the heights of supply with nearly, I think we got up to just over 58,000 active listings on the MLS, which is the highest there's ever been. And so data inventory was reading very high at that point. And for the whole market, a figure around 130 to 140 days is that's kind of the norm.
Okay.
So we're talking somewhere around 4 to 4.5 months. And with that amount of inventory listing, then the market tends to be fairly balanced.
Okay.
If it goes above 150, there tends to be too much supply, and buyers feel like they've got a lot of choice, and prices tend to come down as sellers have to compete with each other. If it drops well below 130, then the opposite happens. The sellers feel like they've got more control because buyers are finding very little to choose from. And so it's if you look in the distant past, we hovered around as 130 to 145 for a very long time without much change, and it wasn't until we got to the 2003 era that things started going a little crazy, and we've hardly had a normal period since.
Where are we now? I assume that is getting to be tight inventory again.
Yeah, we're now below 130, around 128, so that it's not very tight, but it's headed in that direction, and it's headed there quite fast. It's dropped a lot since November, and many people haven't really noticed this yet. You know, the average person has probably not noticed, but just about every realtor has noticed that the supply is getting tight, which means people buying are generally finding themselves in multiple bid situations rather than having it all to themselves.
Exactly. No, definitely have noticed that. Most investors that follow your data would obviously be looking at that. What's my next one to look at to give me a feel for maybe the timing of the next show, or you know how that shift is progressing?
Yeah, my next favorite is looking at the pending listing counts. That measures how many listings are in escrow with a firm contract, and that's something you have to measure on a long-term basis. It's difficult for anybody to do that on their own. That's why I put the website together so that people can look at what was pending 5 years ago and compare it with now. So if you have, say, 8,000 one year, 9,000 the next, and 10,000 the year after, you know the market's getting busier and busier. And if that pending listing count starts dropping off, you know the buyers are starting to disappear. So this is also a leading indicator, not quite as long-term as the other two we mentioned.
Exactly. Now, on the pendings, I assume that the recent 3 years have been very different than past years, and that the pendings probably to the sales level tend to be high just because loans are so tough to get, number one, and secondly, take so long to get done.
Yeah, you're right. Pendings have been higher for two key reasons. One of them being it takes a lot longer to complete all the paperwork to get your loan approved.
Right.
The other one is that we've got quite a lot of short sales in the mix.
Right.
And on top of getting your loan approved, the seller has got to get the short sale approved. And that can take typically, well, these days, 60 to 90 days is quite normal. In the past, it could have easily taken a lot longer. But that tends to mean there are lots of transactions staying pending for a longer time than normal, which means the pending count is higher.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely see pending counts. Right now we're around the 14,000 level, which is close to a record. Allow for those effects, but it also means there's a lot of people trying to buy houses right now, 14,000 contracts out there.
Correct.
And that doesn't count the contracts that have got a contingency, which tend to stay in what we call AWC status, active with a contingent contract. And there's another 8,000 or so in that category.
Okay, and
we don't count them as pending because they're still being marketed. And,
gotcha. Okay.
They're counted in the supply still rather than the demand. And if it changes to pending, then it stops being part of the supply and becomes part of the demand measurement.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, what do you look at next?
There's a thing I call the contract ratio, which is I find very useful. I don't think there are all that many analysts using this, but I recommend it to people. It's a fairly simple calculation, but you do need to know about pending transactions, so that's a little hard to find out if you're not a realtor and you don't have access to the MLS data.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, it's very simple. It just says how many listings are under contract compared with those that are active without a contract. It's another way of comparing current demand versus current supply. So if you say you have 300 listings in a particular area that are active, but you've got 200 that are pending and another 100 that are active with a contract, then you've got 300 under contract and 300 available. So that gives you
right.
a ratio.
Okay.
And if that ratio tends to move towards more under contract, that means the market is heating up. So this is a shorter-term indicator, but it's a very good thing to check if you're about to buy or sell a home. Check whether the market is heating up or cooling down.
That's an interesting one. That is one I haven't taken advantage of either, so I have to admit I have to kind of start looking at that a little bit more closely. See, I learned something even as a user of your system. I learned something in our interviews. That's good news. Okay, what's next on your kind of take a look at list to tell you when the prices are about to shift, or does that get us to prices?
There are two other things I like to check. One of them is the monthly sales volume, because as in the stock market, volume is important, not just price.
Right.
So when volumes are high, that means something significant is going on. If they're low, then it's kind of a boring market with not a lot happening. So check on sales volume. And then something I call the listing success rate is an important indicator. Each listing on the MLS comes to a conclusion at some point. It either closes or it expires or it's canceled.
Correct.
So success is a closing. If it expires or canceled, that's failure. And so I continually measure the success rate by looking at how many closed successfully rather than expired or canceled. So normally, the success rate is in the mid-60s, maybe 60 to 65%, and about a third of listings either expire or get canceled. So when that goes above 70%, again, that starts saying that sellers are actually succeeding much more than average, and it's a hot market. And you can separate different parts of the market and look at the success rate of those individual areas. And for example, bank-owned homes have been above 90% success rate for quite some time because it's very easy to sell a bank-owned home because the price is so attractive. You get lots
correct.
Of bids.
Correct.
Whereas short sales, at one point, they were getting only about 10% success because it was so the banks really weren't very familiar with them and it was very difficult to get approval. But their success rate has gone up to, right now we're just above 50%, so that's much higher than we've seen in the past.
Okay, and I will remind our listeners, too, that all of the things we just talked about can be looked at first in kind of the global market of the Phoenix area, and then you can drill down or do that same analysis by particular cities that you're interested in, or even down to the zip code level, most of these indicators are available.
Yeah, the website supports cities and zip codes as the main geographic splits, but the other thing I would encourage people to do is analyze by price range as well.
Fair point.
Because a home at a particular price point can sometimes have more in common with a home at a similar price point on the other side of town than it does with its own geography, if it's not typical of the surrounding area.
Interesting. Now, I'm sure some listeners are surprised there's so many ways to assess the real estate market. You know, if we draw the analogies you did to the stock market, we talk about, you know, the price went up today or this index went up or down, or like today the most of the indexes are down. Whereas at the same time, the technicians will look at volume and some of the moving averages, maybe some resistance points or whatever, looking at those charts. But that's basically it. But the real estate market is just so much richer in terms of available information. So without something like the Crumper Report, I can't imagine how somebody would really assess the real estate market other than opinion and newspaper articles, which can give you the opposite impression of what's really happening. So it is neat.
Yeah. You really touched on why I'm doing this, why I decided to do it. I'd been dabbling in the stock market for a couple of years, and then when I started really focusing on real estate back in 2003, I thought, well, this doesn't seem to be the same sort of information available. And when I dug into what was available on the MLS and in the public records, I found the problem was a lot of that data is entered without being checked, so the error rate is very high. And in order to produce the Cromford Report, I have to put in out maybe about 4 hours a day just going through all of the new data and getting the errors out of it, cleaning it up, grooming it so that it can then be used for analysis. And so it's a fair amount of upfront investment, but I felt it was worth doing because the information that then comes out is extremely valuable in telling you which areas are doing well, which are declining, and giving you much more reliable indicators than you tend to get in the stock market, which can turn on a dime.
Now, does that mean the stock market will be the next place you'll expand the Cromford Report? You'll do a stock market version?
No, I don't think so. Although I had fun with the stock market. That's a very crowded field with lots of mathematicians trying to come up with new formulae. And what I liked about the real estate market is, particularly in the resale part of it, there were very few people doing what I was planning to do. And I thought, well, I can actually open up a niche for myself. So at the moment, I only do the Greater Phoenix area. So if I'm going to expand, it'll probably make sense to expand geographically and cover a wider area and give that sort of information for other locations.
Okay. Yeah, we will talk about that before we close today. But let's talk a little bit about price. If I read the newspaper, I get conflicting reports, depending on their data source, because they'll interview or ask, or they'll get some press announcement of Case-Shiller National Data says this, or the Arizona School of Real Estate or whatever has said this, and whatever. So they kind of give conflicting data. Prices are either down or they're steady, or they'll talk about housing starts dropping dramatically, and therefore the stock market tanks and all of that. Why so many variations? What's why is there so much noise out there?
Well, one of the problems is that it often takes a long time for these price numbers to come out. Particularly with the Case-Shiller index, that's something that is produced on a three-month rolling average, and then they take 8 weeks to actually produce the number. So by the time they publish it, the data, the midpoint of the data they're measuring is 3 months away in the past. Mm-hmm. So it really doesn't give you what's happening in the market today. It tells you what was going on 3 months ago. And by the end of the following month, you're now 4 months out of date. That's really a key thing that I try to put into the Cromford Report, is to give people daily updates so they get the very latest information. It may sacrifice a little in accuracy, because if you publish on the day that the home was closed, you're dealing with more volatile information. But I felt emphasizing the timeliness and compromising a little bit on the accuracy. Later, the following month, I'll be going back and correcting the numbers, so there will be a slight adjustment to a lot of the numbers I publish, but that doesn't really affect the overall trend in nearly every case I've looked at.
Yeah, you really put data together like days after a month closes.
Oh yeah, I've usually got the whole month's information up there by the 5th of the following month, and of course my daily data is done on a rolling month basis, so I don't really care too much about calendar month ends. I just use the previous monthly period and measure the 30 days or 31 days prior to the date I'm on. Now, the other thing is there are so many different ways that people measure price. You've got medians, you've got averages. I tend to prefer price per square foot, because that makes an adjustment for the average size of the house too. Mm-hmm. And it smooths things out a little, gives you more accurate indicators. And what I've seen happening in the market is really, as I said before, we've had prices that dropped in the second half of last year, but they've been very stable for the period between January and April. And at the in the last 10 days of April, they started to move up. I think it's a little too early to say that's a very strong trend, but they're definitely much more likely to move up at the current point than they are to move lower than they were in January and February, which is really the lowest point we've seen so far.
Great.
So I'm encouraged that we've got stabilization on prices and a slight upward trend in from the numbers I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, and I was having to pull those charts up as well, and quite frankly, the uptick was a little bit stronger than I had thought it was. Now, you do the data by both median and square foot, so it's not like you have a preference and that's all people get. They can look at both ways. And also, you break that down into, you can either get all our areas or city or zip code, so again, it can be sliced and diced and looked at even down to the weekly and daily level, as I recall.
That's right. And, you know, you can compare one city with another as well, you know, if you want to see how Chandler's doing relative to Gilbert and Mesa. That's another thing you can do easily. So I try to give people a tool, not just tell them what I think, but say, you know,
right,
you can work it out for yourself. Here's some numbers, see what you think. And certainly, as you said, the most recent figures for pricing were quite surprisingly strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that might be a little bit of over reaction due to a significant amount of luxury homes in the mix. We've had quite a significant resurgence in the luxury market in the last couple of months. So you put in an extra dozen multi-million dollar homes into the pricing mix, and that will push things up. Even so, I think the market has stabilized on price, and if you exclude the luxury market, I'm still seeing a fairly stable situation at the moment.
Okay. Now, we've clearly had a double dip back in April of 2009. We hit bottom, and then it headed up very nicely, and then back down again.
Yep.
Does the answer whether this current level is lower than the prior low level depend on which measure I'm using?
It really depends on the sector that you're looking at. If you look at the overall market,
mm-hmm.
The second V of the W was
right.
was lower than the first one, but not by very much.
Right.
Okay. If you look at the low end of the market only, then April 2009 was actually lower.
Okay.
With prices, we had a really huge glut of foreclosures at the end of 2008, and prices were really tanking during the first quarter of 2009, hit bottom and then bounced up as investors moved in to snatch up those properties. If you look at only the top end of the market, then we're currently quite a way below where we were in April 2009, because they didn't really have that bounce that the low end
Correct.
Of the market did. So it really depends on which part of the market you're looking at, what the price curve looks like. And in fact, right now I'd say it was the top end of the market that was looking the strongest on pricing. It didn't have that bounce, but it's now been several months where we've had a gentle upward movement. In fact, October last year was really the low point for the sort of Paradise Valley, North Scottsdale area, and other areas like Fountain Hills, Carefree. So I think the above about $300,000, which these days buys you a lot of home.
That's right, that's right.
Their pricing has been looking pretty strong for 6 to 8 months now. The bottom end of the market was looking weak until really the end of February, and that's now stabilized and, if anything, looking stronger. Particularly the bank-owned homes seem to be getting a lot of buying, and I'm seeing prices start to creep up there, having hit bottom just a couple of months ago.
I'm glad you mentioned about the $300,000, for example. Today we consider that, you know, a higher price range, and yet
right.
if some of our international listeners are listening, isn't that kind of a one-bedroom apartment that's not yet finished or something like that? I mean, it's totally different price than where we were several years ago, plus
what
the rest of the world is, and a lot of
Americans
don't understand
that. Our average price was getting up to towards $300,000 in 2006, but now...
Right.
The average is down at $158,000, and $300,000 is a pretty significant property. And particularly
That's
if
right.
you're an international buyer, if you're like a Canadian, you know, then the Canadian
right.
dollar is extremely strong, so that buys a lot of US dollars to buy that home with. So
That's right. There's a lot of international going on right now.
Yeah,
definitely so. Hey, one important point I need to cover to make sure we don't miss it is the term shadow inventory. And that's the other thing that's talked about by so many people. Tell us, is there a shadow inventory?
Well, the first question is, what do you really mean by that? Because people use it to mean so many different things.
Excellent.
Originally, the term was introduced to mean stuff that the banks owned, but they weren't putting on the market. There was this theory that banks were hiding homes from us. And really, that was always a myth. You talk to anybody who's actually in the asset management of the bank, there's no way they want to own a lot of homes. If they get one back from foreclosure, they tend to try and sell it as quickly as they can. Now, as quickly as they can doesn't always mean immediately, because you know they're limited by the number of human beings they've got working for them too. So when there was a huge amount of homes getting foreclosed, it often took them a while to get them on the market. But that was an intentional delay. But these days, people have changed what they mean. They tend to talk about the shadow inventory as including everybody who is more than 90 days late with their loan, everybody's in foreclosure, and all of the homes that the banks have that aren't already in escrow or on the market. So it's kind of all the distressed supply. And, of course, that's not really invisible. It's not too difficult to measure it. So the term shadow inventory is something of a misnomer, because it's possible to track most of those homes, particularly those that are in foreclosure. That's a matter of public record. You just have to go to the county recorder and you can find out exactly what they are. So they're not in the shadows.
Correct.
But they are not necessarily available for purchase. So, and at some point, they're likely to become so. Generally speaking, if they're had a foreclosure notice, then many people are in that situation. They attempt a short sale. So they do get marketed.
Correct. They're on the market.
Quite a lot of those succeed now, and they don't end up getting foreclosed. They get into another person's hands through a short sale, which is often very effective. But there is a shadow inventory. The question is it growing or is it dissipating? And my figures show that it's actually disappearing quite fast at the moment. First of all, the trustees are still keeping up a pretty brisk pace at holding foreclosure auctions, and they're now foreclosing on homes faster than the new notices are generating potential foreclosures. So the homes that are pending foreclosure have been dropping very fast over the last 3 months. We used to have over 50,000. Now we're below 30,000. So that foreclosure wave, as measured by pending foreclosures, is definitely dissipating. The REO inventory, those are the ones that have gone through foreclosure and belong to banks, that number is also falling. Despite the large number of foreclosures, once they get to the banks are finding a lot of people eager to buy them. And I would say that the foreclosure sales at the courthouse steps are very, very active. Lots of people buying directly from the trustee rather than waiting for them to go back to the bank and buying them from the bank. In fact, last 2 months we've had record levels of third-party buyers at the Maricopa County trustee sales. There was an article in the Arizona Republic yesterday about that, in fact, and how competitive those are these days.
I actually didn't see the article yet. Okay, interesting. So I shouldn't worry too much about that shadow following me around, and things are going to the world is going to end, and real estate is going to tank.
Yeah, I hear a lot of rumors, but you know I tend to rely only on numbers rather than what people tell me. They've heard from somebody else. So the shadow inventory that I measure, I mean, it has been, we have had quite a lot of pending foreclosures and a lot of people late with the loans, but those counts are all going down. So if they continue to go down, that can only mean the market gets better rather than worse.
Exactly. Well, before we close here, there's two things that we definitely need to cover. First of all, what does a subscription cost? It's obviously $1,000 a year, right?
No, it's $300, in fact. A year, or you can have a quarterly subscription for $90.
So it is. This is something that is within people's reach. It's not something that's only for companies to be able to subscribe.
Absolutely. I tried to price it so that anybody who really is interested in the market can afford it.
Correct. And as you said, realtors are still free.
They get 100% discount at the moment through Armless, who provide it to them as part of their subscription to Armless.
And those realtors are not taking advantage of it. Shame on them. Because very often they don't provide that data. As a matter of fact, I don't think I've ever seen a realtor provide some of that data to their clients. I often ask them for it, and I have to pull it myself. They don't even know necessarily all of the information on there as well as I do, which is kind of scary.
Well, I spend so much time putting the numbers together, I haven't put an awful lot of effort into marketing. I've just relied on word of mouth. So there are certainly plenty of realtors who do. There's about 11,000 who are registered with my site, but that means
okay.
There's also about 20,000 who are not.
Who are not, who don't know much about it at all, exactly.
Right.
And I'll remind people of the URL. It's www.cromfordreport.com, C-R-O-M-F-O-R-D. Report.com. And one other topic that we touched on a little bit, expansion plans. But you're currently only available here in the Phoenix area. So somebody in the UK or somebody in New York or Atlanta doesn't have access to their market. What's next on the docket?
Well, I have had contact from people out of state saying we'd really like to have something similar. The issue is, to do this job properly, it does require quite a lot of personal hands-on work. You can't just stick a computer in and crunch the numbers. There are people who try to do that, but because you're dealing with real estate, first of all, the error rate in the raw data is so high that you end up with graphs that don't look right.
Mm-hmm.
You have to put a lot of effort into getting the data cleaned up. The second thing is that there are a lot of strange anomalies everywhere you go about the local real estate market that you have to take account of. You know, for example, locally, we've got Ahwatukee, which is really part of Phoenix, but is like its own separate market.
Correct.
So when you look at listings from the MLS, they may call the home part of Phoenix, or they may call it part of Ahwatukee. It's up to the realtor to decide. So if you just take what the realtor says, you're probably going to pick
right.
up about a quarter of the listings in Ahwatukee. And so you've got to go in there and look at, well, where is this thing actually? You know, check on the zip code, check on the parcel number. And so there's a fair amount of work involved in moving to each area. So I'm looking for people who can help me do that. You know, I only know the Phoenix area. If I'm moving to cover, say, Tucson or San Diego, I need a local expert who could be able to supply those sort of little wrinkles and explain how it works in their local area.
So there's a tip to some of our listeners. There is an entrepreneurial opportunity to take this great report elsewhere. Hey,
yes.
Michael, really, really appreciate your joining us this morning. I know I've learned a lot, and I already use the system. So people that are not real familiar with it, hopefully they're going to be on that computer today and either getting subscribed or getting to know it if they already have a subscription. Appreciate it. Thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you very much.
All right, now let me just summarize a little bit. Will housing prices go lower in some cities in the next few weeks and months? Probably. Will housing prices be higher in the Phoenix area in the next 12 months? Well, based on the data, probably. So follow the first commandment I shared with you in the past. Stocks and commodities are up dramatically. Real estate hasn't gone up yet. What does the first commandment tell you to do? You know. I should remind you there are archives available, past shows, so you have no clue what I'm talking about on the First Commandment. Just look up First Commandment or send me an email. I'll forward you the link. Let me remind you about our next Wealth DNA radio show, second Monday of June. That's Monday, June 13th, 8 a.m., same place, same time. In the next few shows, I plan to have a guest who focuses on building the local economy in Arizona. There are similar groups around the U.S., and the insights she shares will apply wherever you live and invest. If you haven't received emails reminding you about this show, just send an email to me at ron@wealthdna.us, or as I said before, there's a follow button at the top of the picture. Also, if you want to find out how I make money in real estate without buying, renting, or selling, join us at one of the next Learn to Earn a Higher Return seminar. That next one is just following our next show, which is Tuesday, June 14th at 10:15 a.m. It's held at Entrust Arizona's Knowledge Center in Phoenix. And again, I can send you the address if you don't know it. And by the way, there's a change in time for success or failure, so stay tuned. You'll hear Tom Legren and Terry Munther in a very short time. So check some of your emails, grab a cup of coffee, and we'll see you back here. Happy investing, and take a closer look at real estate investing.
You've been listening to Wealth DNA with the Ron Naraki. Wealth DNA is a Boomer and the Babe Enterprises radio production. Contact them at boomerandthebabe.com.